Since the next speaker here, I don't get to give you the full hour presentation of my dissertation. I'll stick to the chapter that I'm here to present. This is my work on some long-term phosphorus study sites where we applied in forestry situations. But before I get started, what I wanted to do was go ahead and take a moment to celebrate the life of Dr. Lucian Zelazny. Many of you would know him, and his contributions to soil chemistry is pretty profound, and the students came out of his lab, and I was fortunate enough to be one of the last PhD students to get his signature on my dissertation, which I really value. So, this data will be published in Nature shortly. When you apply fertilizer to forests, they grow faster. We're expecting this publication, you know, in the near future. But the long-term stuff is what I was most interested in. We've seen in other sites in New Zealand and at a couple of sites in, or one site in Georgia, where a single application of phosphorus at 56 kilograms per hectare, which is relatively low compared to agronomic situations, one time can have carryover effects into the next forest stand 20, 25, 30 years later. So that was our question. Have we increased labile phosphorus pools 20 plus years after the first application? And so the factors that affect labile phosphorus pools, as you guys know, includes soil pH, soil organic matter, the different minerals that are present, iron and aluminum oxides that may be coating soil minerals have a huge effect, but also in forest soils and some other agronomic crops, we get oxalate or citrate, organic anions that are exuded that can mobilize phosphorus by competitively competing for the absorption sites. And so in the standard tests for labile phosphorus in forest soils include water extractable, there's Olsen P for your more basic sites. Malic 1 was developed in North Carolina and was a standard, but Malic improved his method with the Malic 3 extractions where he included EDTA. And what is significant about EDTA is the fact that we know that that is capable of dissolving poorly crystalline or amorphous iron and aluminum minerals. So that improved the efficiency of the extraction, which made the agronomic tests a little bit easier for trying to determine what are critical levels in agronomic situations for phosphorus. And in forestry applications, the Forest Nutrition Co-op has determined that for Malic 3 extractions, a critical level of 6 milligrams per kilogram is all you need to have an increase in labile pools of phosphorus for the crop tree. In the southern United States, at least, for loblolly pine. And so we know that the EDTA is capable of desorbing iron and aluminum, poorly crystalline minerals. And some work by Sato and Comfort, Sato just walked in, they did some really nice work where he took, with wet chemistry, because they didn't have access to a synchrotron, and with increasing oxalate concentrations, and they also did citrate. What they saw was an increase in the cations that were released, iron and aluminum, with increasing concentrations of these organic ligands that we know are capable of dissolving minerals. And at the same time, they saw in their soils an increase in anions or phosphorus is what they were concerned with as well. And so I took their good work and ran with it for my dissertation. And just a real quick review, the difference between ligand exchangeable phosphorus would be an oxalate anion that competes and dislodges the phosphorus from the exchange site. And then in soils with a lot of organic matter, you can also have possibly have metal bridges with aluminum down here bound to this molecules of soil organic matter and have ligand exchange reaction with the phosphorus being released. This in contrast to a ligand-promoted dissolution of the mineral surface where you have the oxalate anion that is occluded you have increasing concentrations of oxalate that will result in the removal of that outer layer of iron and aluminum oxides, and then the competitive release of the phosphate anion. So going back to our objective, and the hypothesis was, yes, if we go back to this site 20 plus years later, we've had a significant increase in Malic III extractable phosphorus, these labile phosphorus pools, as a result of fertilization. But what I wanted to know was, well, are these the ligand exchangeable pools of phosphorus, or is this ligand promoted dissolution pools of phosphorus? And that would be important because it requires more oxalate that would be needed to be released into the rhizosphere to access those pools. And so, real quickly, my methods, we did standard Malic III extraction with ICP analyses, followed Sato and Comerford's work with little modifications. These are the different extracting solutions. What he did was the solutions were buffered at a soil pH, which was 4. A half a gram of soil was loaded into these syringes. Then they were shaken for 25 seconds and then filtered through a 0.45 micron filter and measured for iron, aluminum, and phosphorus, magnesium as well. To determine where the difference between exchangeable iron, aluminum, and what is dissolution, we used 1 molar copper chloride solution for GIT to determine what is exchangeable iron and aluminum in these soils. And then we also qualitatively measured the presence, not concentration, the presence of fulvic acids with this E4-E6 ratio in light. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. So here's our site. This was in coastal plains of Virginia. It's a typic paleoquault. And the original application of fertilizer P was 56 kilograms per hectare. And here's the results. On the y-axis, we have the elemental concentrations. On the x-axis, oxalate. And you can see with increasing concentrations, we get increasing metals that are being released and really starting to increase at 2 micromoles per gram of soil. Now, here's the fulvic acid fractions. Now, again, this is a pH of 4 that these soils are being extracted, so your fulvic acids are soluble in an acidic solution. And again, this only is a qualitative measurement. So this is saying, hey, that these fulvic acids are present. And it's easier for you guys, they're not going to publish this in the paper, but you can see here these nice clear solutions. We get to these 2 millimoles, and then we get this presence, these nice dark fulvic acids being released. So here is our copper chloride extractable aluminum. This is actually just below, this is a couple of tenths below this point here at 20 micromoles, and copper chloride extractable iron. And again, this is just right at this point at 20 micromoles. So what we believe is happening is that at around this 20 point, maybe a little bit earlier, is you're switching from ligand exchange reactions to dissolution reactions of the mineral surface, resulting in an increase in iron and aluminum into the soil solution, and at the same time you're releasing these fulvic acids into the solution. So here's the same data. That y-axis has changed. We're up to 120 micromoles, and here is the Malic III data. So again, we've got ligands, which is either oxalate for this data or the EDTA for Malic III, and you can see we've got a 10-fold increase at 10 micromoles, which is the equivalent for EDTA, 10 micromoles of EDTA per gram of soil. We've got a 10-fold increase in iron and aluminum. Here's the copper chloride extractable iron and aluminum. So here is the phosphorus data, which us foresters were concerned with. Again, focusing at this point around 20 micromoles, and what we see is below that, We've got what we believe is ligand exchange reactions of phosphorus being released into the soil solution, or the extract solution, actually. And then above this point, we feel pretty confident saying these are ligand promoted dissolution reactions of phosphorus being released. And here are the malic 3 extractable phosphorus concentrations. So again, we feel pretty confident that we are into malic 3 is accessing these dissolvable pools. Here's the malic 3 critical level for forestry. That comes right over this point, which is our control soil. So the fertilized site is higher and is above that malic 3 critical value. And then also, this critical level in soil solution, Dr. Z always said, all you need is 0.1 parts per million in the soil, in the actual soil solution, and you've got enough phosphorus for your plant. You see, we're well above that. So yes, malic 3 we still believe is a good test for doing these standard routine tests for phosphorus, but the advantage to doing this ligand exchange reactions or dissolution reactions is the fact that you're getting a more precise estimate. And we saw iron and aluminum is tenfold higher. Phosphorus, we believed, is being released from some of these dissolvable pools. And yes, once again, at the 0.06 level, this was a significant long-term fertilizer effect. But what does it all mean? Why do we actually care about that fact? Well, what I did in my next chapter, actually, was to try to get at functional diversity of mycorrhizae in soil, which is what my true love is. So I followed up some work of this gentleman, Auger, trying to look at what these different fungi are doing. I collected these rhizosphere soils and spent about a month and a half in a 4-degree C room, very carefully taking these soil particles out of the rhizosphere. And what we see in the fertilized sites, this is the same line for phosphorus being released at increasing concentrations. Here's my rhizosphere soils. So I took the data and then didn't have very much soils, as you could imagine. And so I bracketed around this point between ligand exchange and ligand-promoted dissolution. And this difference here is what we are termed as bioaccessible phosphorus, not what's being taken up by the tree, but what's being taken up in the rhizosphere. And whenever I scaled this up to the stand level, what we ended up getting is about, in the fertilized sites, about 3 kilograms per hectare of phosphorus that has become bioaccessible. And what we know from studies in the Forest and Nutrition Cooperative and others is that young stands, so this site was just about to be harvested, young stands need somewhere to meet optimum growth between 2.5 and 6 kilograms of phosphorus per hectare per year. And we're right at that in our fertilized site. This was during the time when the stand was still present, obviously, if it was rhizosphere soils. And a mature stand needs about 8 kilograms per hectare. And if you figure that the leaves retain about 60 or 70% of the phosphorus through retranslocation, then once again, this 3 kilograms per hectare would be roughly matching the stand's demand. So when appropriate, when you think you have the right organisms in the rhizosphere, this, I think, would be a helpful test. And once again, I searched some of the literature and some really great work by this gentleman, Van Hees, who measured oxalate being exuded by the individual hyphae, which are 1 or 2 microns in diameter. And my data is coming up pretty close. If you were to take these mycorrhizal associations, we know that they extend the life of a fine root to 6 months, and I'm actually getting pretty close to with my 20 micromole or 2 micromoles of oxalate, I'm getting actually pretty close to what could be exuded by those mycorrhizae over 6 months. So this could be, I didn't measure oxalate in the soil, but this could be a reaction that's actually happening. So with that, I'll acknowledge my dissertation committee and my advisor, too, who I have a lot of respect for and really enjoyed working for, supportive of these individuals. And we'll thank Pittsburgh for a really great conference, but I'm sorry to say that we're happy the Yankees won. I'd love some questions.
Thank you.